It's a great pleasure to have Gleb tell us about two-dimensional black holes and quantum spin chains. And as usual, do ask questions as we go. And if your internet is good enough, keep your camera on. It's always more fun. So we have a more informal feel. And okay, here we are, 15. So Gleb, please take it away. Thanks again for telling us about black holes and spin chains.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. I have 1 hour, right? So 50 minutes or how much time do I have?
Yeah, normally 1 hour, including questions. So aim at 50 minutes.
Okay, all right. I'll keep control of the time.
But if there are no questions, we have 1 hour.
Hopefully there'll be some questions. View full screen. First of all, just let me say thank you. I guess to the organizers for inviting me and giving me opportunity to talk about my research. I'll be talking about a joint work that I did with William Bajan Sigir Lukyanov about the 2D black hole signal models. So, one of the important developments, I guess, of QFT in the 20th century has been the concept of the Feynman propagator. And it possesses the interesting property in that it can be meaningfully continued to imaginary values of time. Then this led to the idea of the Wick rotation, so that the Q of T in Lorentzian signature, 1 plus 1 dimensional, or 1 plus D dimensional Minkowski space with Lorentzian signature, described by this path integral, can be Wick rotated and interpreted as a statistical mechanics system describing equilibrium configurations of a classical field phi, weighted by this action functional A, where A is the Euclidean action. And the temperature is identified with the inverse of the Planck's constant. So in order for the Euclidean action function to be well defined, there are some conditions for thermodynamic stability, such as convexity of the action functional. And these usually follow from the standard Q of T requirements, for instance, unitarity. However, in many physically interesting systems, the convexity of the action functional is violated. And one example is monobilian gauge theories, a very famous example where the problem is fixed by gauge invariance. And another more technical example is the class of nonlinear sigma models in two space-time dimensions. These are field theories in the simplest case given by this form, when a classical action takes this form, where phi is a map from the, in this case, from the Euclidean space-time cylinder to the world sheet. And in the case when this GAB is not a positive definite matrix, then the definition of the action functional is problematic. Let me just mention that nonlinear supermodels have various interesting applications, in particular to string theory and condensed matter physics. When considering a nonlinear sigma model with define a pseudo-Riemannian manifold, one idea is to use the same trick as a Wick rotation, but this time in the target space to the metric tensor GAB that contains the coupling constants of the theory. And this procedure can be illustrated on a simple example, which is known as the 2D Lorentzian black hole target space, which is a target space manifold with this metric. So it obviously has Lorentzian signature because this is basically a Pauli matrix sigma X, which has eigenvalues 1 minus 1. It was noted by Witten that this Lorentzian black hole metric was interesting to study because it possesses all the characteristic features of a black hole geometry. In particular, the space-time diagram looks like this, and it's very similar to the space-time diagram of a Schwarzschild metric in the 3 plus 1 dimensions, the usual one, expressed in Kruskal coordinates. In particular, when UV equals to 0, which are these black lines, it has there's a horizon, and UV is equal to one, which are these zigzag lines, there is a singularity. There is no globally defined time coordinate for this metric, but there is a killing vector, which is time-like in regions one and two, and space-like in regions three and four. And explicitly, the time coordinate in terms of U and V would be given by this expression in regions one and two, of course. So performing the way one performs the weak rotation in the target space to get a metric with positive definite signature from this one in Lorentzian signature is one considers the fields valued in regions one and two and then takes them to be complex and then imposes this reality condition U star is equal to minus V so that this time coordinate is just what becomes pure pure imaginary. Then substituting this into the original expression for the metric, one and ignoring this overall minus sign that comes out the front, one obtains a positive definite, a metric with positive definite signature that's written here where U is a complex field. And it turns out that this metric appeared originally in the work of Hamilton in 88 on the Ricci flow, and that's why it's usually referred to as the target space is usually referred to as the Hamilton cigar. So this way, one arrives at two nonlinear sigma models. One called the two-dimensional Lorentzian black hole nonlinear sigma model, which has this sort of target space. And as I mentioned, it's the path, the Euclidean path integral. Here I've written in Minkowski space, the Euclidean path integral just be have a plus sign here. But where the Euclidean path integral is problematic. And also this Euclidean version, which is known as the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model. So a lot is known about the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model. In particular, it turns out to be a unitary CFT with central charge greater than two. And it's, for instance, the spectrum conformal dimension was essentially obtained by Dijkstra, Wilinder, Wilinder in the 92 paper. But of course, there's a lot of other works. I mean, it's a rather famous theory that occurred occurs in the context of the ADS CFT correspondence, I think, and also was also studied as a simple example of a non-rational conformal field theory because its spectrum of conformal dimensions is continuous and many results have been obtained, including, so, for instance, the three-point functions followed from the work of Jörg Teschner on thermal ADS-free, considering a sigma model in thermal ADS-free. But still, even despite the fact that we know all these results in the Euclidean black hole sigma model, the result, the question still remains, like how can these results be carried over to the Lorentzian black hole nonlinear sigma model? Or what meaning do they have for this nonlinear sigma model? And in fact, this question is sort of a conceptual one that would occur for any, whenever one tries to apply this trick of weak rotation to a nonlinear sigma model with a pseudo-Riemannian manifold. And well, a potential approach or a potential way, what I believe is a potential way forward to studying this problem has recently appeared from the analysis of a certain integrable spin chain. And this is basically what I'll be talking about in this talk will be just the link between, I guess it's conjectured link between the spin chain and these black hole sigma models, both the Euclidean and the Lorentzian. So the spin chain that I have in mind is given by this one here, and it's sort of, it's very similar to, I don't know, maybe people are familiar with the spin chain Hamiltonian of the X of Z model, which is famous from the point of view integrability. So it consists of, it's a one-dimensional chain where Pauli matrices are attached to each site. And usually, for instance, periodic boundary conditions are imposed. And N here is the number of sites of the model. And it describes, say, nearest neighbor interactions, next to nearest neighbor interactions of the spins, and just next to nearest neighbor interactions. And it's turns out to be integrable, and it's actually obtained from the transfer matrix of a inhomogeneous six-vertex model. So it's built along the completely standard lines of integrability. But the one thing that is different to the XXZ model is that its Hamiltonian is not Hermitian. So there's an I over here, So when one takes the Hermitian conjugate, there'll be a change in sign. And in fact, if one were to just take this Hamiltonian and diagonalize it on a computer, say at 3 or 4 sites, one would see that the energy spectrum is complex. So that there is no positive, one can't come up with any positive definite form such that H will be a self-adjoint operator. And nevertheless, this spin chain was extensively studied by many authors. And in this paper in particular, Iker Jacobson Salur, in the regime when gamma, this parameter gamma, which is like sort of an anisotropic parameter, is takes values from 0 to pi to pi and 2, they claim that the critical behavior is governed by the Euclidean black hole nonlinear signal model. So in what follows, I'm going to try to explain the motivation behind the claim of these authors. This will basically be the first introductory part of my talk. So the results of Iklab, Jack, and Salior are based, they're based on the papers of, well, rather famous paper of Modelsenor, Gouvi, and Son, and its further development by Hanani, Prezis, and Troost, where the computation of the partition function for the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model is considered. And the partition function is defined as the path integral over the torus of the Euclidean action. So here you have dtu squared plus t plus the dxu squared of the Euclidean action of the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model. And they perform a one loop computation. And remarkably, the result turns out to be a module invariant. So tau is the module parameter corresponding to the torus, and it turns out to be invariant under these modular transformations. And they, as a result, they propose this to be the exact partition function for the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model, because this is a remarkable property. An important point that one must keep in mind is that the target space is non-compact. So what I mean by this is, if you take this metric, it can be embedded in three-dimensional Euclidean space, and it takes this, looks like an infinitely long cigar with an infinitely long cylindrical part that actually extends to infinity. So in this drawing, it should actually go to infinity. In these coordinates, the tip here corresponds to u is equal to 0, while this infinitely long cylindrical part is when u is log greater than 1, and then this 1 in the denominator can be neglected. And then just upon the change of coordinates using to e to the phi plus I theta, the metric becomes, ignoring this one, just d phi squared plus d theta squared. So here you have a free field theory on an infinite cylinder where phi takes values from up to minus infinity, or up to plus infinity, sorry. And theta takes values from 0 to 2 pi. And as a result of the fact that this is a non-compact target space, when you take this Euclidean path integral, you get a divergence. So in order to regularize that divergence, one takes the cigar and one needs to sort of introduce a cutoff. So one needs to introduce a cutoff for the target manifold, which could be any shape at a distance log 1 over epsilon from the tip of the cylinder, where epsilon is the regularization parameter and should be considered to be a lot smaller than 1. Then the singular part of to the contribution of the partition function is just the partition function of two free bodies. Well, one can just replace the cigar manifold by infinite cylinder in order to calculate the singular part. These tips and this part doesn't contribute. One just replaces it by infinite cylinder and computes the partition function of two free bosons. One compact one that takes values from 0 to 2 pi, and one boson that takes values in a segment of length 1 over epsilon as epsilon goes to 0. And then using standard sort of free field theory computations, one obtains this expression. So this part comes from the computation of the partition function for the compact boson. Here Q is the modular, is like I think it's called the modular norm, so it's equal to 2 e to the 2 pi I tau, and Q bar is the complex conjugate. And P and P bar are related to the zero mode momentum of the boson that goes around the cylinder. In particular, because the boson is compact, the zero mode momentum's P and P bar are quantized and can be expressed in terms of two integers. B, which corresponds to the U1 charge of the cigar. The cigar has an isometry, as you can rotate it. So it has an isometry. The Lagrangian doesn't depend on RQ explicitly. And so this is the corresponding U1 charge. And also the winding number, which just corresponds to the number of times your field winds around the cylinder. I'm assuming periodic boundary conditions, and you have a torus. So as X goes around once, this thing can go around, the field can go around many times around the cylinder. Yes, so the parameter end here is related. It's just a way of one way of parameterizing the Planck constant. And this part is just a partition function of its divergence. It's proportional to log to basically the volume of the target manifold. And it comes from calculating the partition function of the non-compact field. But eta tau here is just the standard Dedekind eta function. So as I mentioned before in these papers, via one loop computation, the authors found this explicit formula for the partition function of the Euclidean black hole nonlinear Sigma model. And let me just take a moment to explain what this means. So again, n is related to the Planck constant, tau and q here are related to the modular parameter. Eta is the Dedekind eta function of theta 1 is just a standard Jacobi elliptic theta 1 function. And there's a sum here of a, b, and so on. So it's a rather complicated looking expression. Z here is a integration parameter, and it should be integrated over a parallelogram where the integration domain actually depends on tau, and it's drawn here. It's a parallelogram with endpoints plus minus 1/2 and plus minus 1/2 tau. But the property of this integral is that actually this theta 1 vanishes as z goes to 0. And so you have a near z goes to 0, you basically have something like d2z over z squared, which has a logarithmic divergence. And so in order to deal with this divergence, regularize it, one has to take this parallelogram and cut out a little circle around z equals to 0 of, say, circumference epsilon. Then the partition function will contain a divergence log of 1 over epsilon. This epsilon actually turns out to be, well, a priori, it turns out to be proportional to the epsilon that I had on the previous slide, just the way this has been arranged, up to some non-universal constant that can be just explicitly computed that depends only on the constant n. It's important to note that this partition function assumes some sort of regularization of the cigar manifold. So some sort of cutoff at the end, which comes from, I guess, this was computed in the context of strings in ADS3, and this imposes some regularization on the target manifold. Maldacena, Agurian-Son, and Hanani, Prezes, and Trust go further. They not only compute this partition function, but they also compute a density of states, and that comes about because of this regularization. And I just want to give some intuition from quantum mechanics of how this density of states arises. So here's the cigar manifold, and there is some cutoff, which one doesn't know what it looks like, but just schematically, there's some cutoff over here. And in particular, cigar possesses a component in its Hilbert space of these so-called scattering states. And these are interpreted states that move towards the cigar and scatter off the tip. And S, at the start for the cigar, S is a continuous number that takes any values from 0 to infinity. Now, when one imposes the cutoff, our intuition from quantum mechanics, of course, tells us that S must be quantized. If this was an infinitely long cylinder, the quantization condition would just look like this if we ignore the tip and we ignore this cutoff region, where m is an integer. But a more accurate quantization condition can be obtained by accounting for the phase shift that the particle picks up when it bounces off this, when it scatters off the end and it scatters off this part, the particle possesses a phase shift, and using like a basically a Bohr-Sommerfeld quantization condition, one obtains this formula where delta S takes into account this phase shift of the tip and of the cut, and M is the same integer. Then as epsilon goes to zero, this states S become more and more densely packed, with delta S being 1/(log(1)ε). So it's becomes a very large number. And the density of states of how these are packed, they're obtained just by basically differentiating this formula with respect to S, roughly speaking. And it's given by this formula. Literally, you just differentiate this with respect to S. And to a first approximation, density is proportional to log(1)ε, because these states are 1/(log(1)ε) apart. Now, from the analysis of their partition function, Molesino, Gruson, Hernandez, Presence, and Truss proposed that rho is given by this expression, and they propose an explicit expression for the phase shift. So they suggest that the regularization that they obtain from the one-loop computation corresponds to putting a Liouville wall at one end of the cigar. And so this delta of S is just given by the scattering of the tip, cigar scattering amplitude, which is computed in some unpublished works of Zamolochkov, and the Liouville scattering amplitude, which is also computed by the famous paper of Zamolochkov and Zamolochkov, and is given by this expression of gamma functions, where P and P bar, of course, should be understood to be quantized. They're the zero Mosesian of the field at theta, which are quantized because theta is compact. And therefore,
there is a question.
I want to ask about what is the philosophical meaning of partition function.
What's the philosophical meaning? What do you mean by a philosophical meaning?
Deep meaning.
Well, I mean, so I gave you a mathematical definition first of all, so that should be fine. But a partition function, well, from basic statistical mechanics, describes. I guess this partition function doesn't have any sources. It would describe if you take your cigar and put it into a finite volume and then you heat it up, it will describe the thermal equilibrium expectation value of phi. And so just in usual statistical mechanics that you consider in a probably a graduate course, it's the same idea, except instead of discrete variables, usually you consider like an Ising model where you have spins plus minus one, you have a continuous field. So that would be the meaning. Is that okay? Or you mean in terms of like black hole physics, something or along these lines?
It's better to come back in the discussion part if needed, if the question is still there, but maybe you could continue for now.
Okay, so sorry, maybe it's probably my fault. I probably wasn't prepared for this question. I'll just continue then. Sorry about this. So they can, and then there's this density of states, which comes from the regularization. This is a result. Now, on the other hand, starting from the analysis of the spin chain that I presented to you a few slides back, in a series of papers, a certain class of low energy states for the spin chain were studied. As a particular class, these states turn out to flow to conformal primaries in the limit when the size of the number of sites of the spin chain goes to infinity, but the radius of the circumference of the spin chain is held fixed, but the number of sites to the latter spacing is sent to zero effectively. And by by studying these states, it was found that, in fact, the critical exponents, by studying the low energy spectrum in finite volume, was found that the critical exponents are continuously distributed. And it turns out that the density of states are given basically by the same formula that was obtained in the context of the black hole nonlinear sigma model, except the regularization parameter here, instead of epsilon, is played by n, where n is the number of sites. And these the authors, Ikrajek and Salyor, they show very convincing numerical evidence. For example, here I've just reproduced, I'm using my own computer for a very small number of sites using Bethe-Ansatz integrability techniques. And these crosses were obtained by considering low energy states and looking at the conformal dimensions of these states by considering the low energy spectrum and calculating delta S, roughly speaking. And these lines come from this measure, this 1/4 pi ds partial S delta S. So this is this is pretty remarkable that at the time that the computation in the context of basically string theory results in and a computation in a completely other area of physics, just calculating, considering the spectrum some finite dimensional matrix on Hamiltonian, which is basically almost the same as the XXZ model, results in this wonderful coincidence. The fact that these density of states that coincide was one of the main arguments and the main motivation that led the authors of the paper, Kujek and Salyor, to state that the critical behavior of the spin chain is governed by a two-dimensional Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model. However, in making this claim, when we considered this work ourselves, there were a few issues. And the first issue is that the nonlinear sigma model is a unitary CFT, while the spin chain Hamiltonian is not Hermitian, as I mentioned before, and in particular, its energy spectrum at finite n is complex. Of course, it's very easy to refute this claim, and that's the fact that it's a common situation, or it's not that uncommon that when the regularized theory like the spin chain is non-unitary, but unitarity is restored in the continuum limit. So one can just argue that perhaps on the spin chain is not unitary, but at n goes to infinity, it's low energy behavior is governed by a unitary CFT, and in particular, for instance, the energy spectrum, while I've been mentioning at finite n, the low energy spectrum is complex, but actually when take n goes to infinity, the energy spectrum becomes real, which is what one expects, because the energy spectrum, the spectrum conformal dimensions of Sagan on the new signal is also real. So that's not a big issue, but it still might raise a concern. The second issue, number two, is the fact that actually in the later works which we studied the spin chain, we found that so as I mentioned before, the result of the density of states for the spin chain, they considered only the conformal states belong to the conformal primaries in the conformal towers that appear in the scaling limit, but the states, density of states belonging to the descendant actually turn out to not agree with what's in the papers of Molacena, Wurison, and Hahn, Presitz, and Trust. And for instance, the density of states belonging to the conformal primary, which are excited states where you have a one right excitation and no barred excitation, is not given by the same formula. Just on the spin chain, one can check numerically, for instance, that you actually have this extra ratio of factors here. And given these two discrepancies and also the fact that the Hamiltonian is not Hermitian, when we started this project, we were very excited because we thought that maybe the CFT is not the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model, and it's governed by a non-unitary CFT, which might have some relation to the Lorentzian black hole and nonlinear sigma model. And this would, of course, be very exciting. So first of all, I mean, the main issue in the Salyor conjecture is obviously issue two, because if it doesn't work out that the density of states is the same as in the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model, then we can discard it. We can discard what they say. Then it's just wrong. So the next few slides, I want to talk about the second issue, which seems the more critical one. And in order to do that, we have to sort of, before, when I talked about the derivation, it was a bit hand-wavy, and we have to really examine in detail how this Parfentical computation of the partition function of the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model is related to the standard computation that one might expect from statistical physics as a trace, basically, of e to the, well, roughly speaking, e to the minus beta h, where h is the Hamiltonian. Here, c is the central charge of the sphere, and L0, L0 bar are the standard operators that measure the conformal weight of a state. So L plus L0 plus L, well, I'm sure you all know this. So the density of states were described, essentially described by Dijkstra, Vilinder, Vilinder in 92. And they contain a discrete and a continuous, the Hilbert space contains a discrete and a continuous component. Let me first talk about the continuous component, which is the one I'm mainly going to talk about. And I'll say a few words about the discrete one. So I mentioned, well, briefly touched on before, that the continuous component are interpreted as scattering states. Let's start here in the domain where the cigar is flat. They go scatter off the TIFF and they come back. And S is the zero mode of the field. It should be joined here because it's periodic boundary conditions. But it's the zero mode of momentum of the field, of the incoming field. And states with S, different signs, S and minus S, should actually be identified because it's the same state. It's just going in and coming out. And in this asymptotically flat domain of the target manifold, the Lagrangian essentially basically becomes that of a free field. And one can quantize the theory here as a, just as a free field theory. And this way, the space of states has this decomposition into irreducible representations of the conformal symmetry algebra. So there's, first of all, there's a direct integral over all these possible states, S over S greater than zero, because states with S and minus S are identified. So there's a direct integral over all possible scattering states. And then there's a sum over these quantum numbers, V, which is associated to the U1 symmetry, and W, which is the winding number, a sum over all these Vs and Ws. And the thing in the integrand here is basically isomorphic to the space of states of the two bosonic fields, phi and theta. It's just the space of states of a free field with where theta, where S is the zero mode momentum of this one of the fields phi, and P and P bar related to the zero mode momentums of theta. And I know this might be a bit elementary, but just to be clear, mainly about notation, I want to describe what this space looks like, just the Fock space. I'm sure you all know this. So because it's a free field theory, the fundamental fields can be written as a combination of a right and a left moving as a result of the classical equations of motion. And in particular, partial plus a phi would be a left moving, I think that's left moving field. These would be left moving fields where partial plus is just a like-hand derivative. And they can, because we assume that they're periodic and they're left moving, they can be expanded into a Fourier series where these A hat M's are operators, the Fourier coefficient operators satisfying the standard Heisenberg algebra. And this VPS, this left space of states in the tensor product, the right one would be obtained by the right moving fields, by considering the right moving fields. So this left space of states is just a linear span. You start with the Fock vacuum, which is annihilated by all the operators with K bigger than zero, and act with all the creation modes, all possible creation modes. And then you take all possible linear combinations of this state. And in our normal conventions, this is an eigen, given that A0 and B0, they commute with all the Heisenberg operators, this P of S can be made to be an eigenstate of A0 and B0. And in our conventions, the eigenvalue of A0 is S over square root of N. These square root of Ns and square root of N plus 2s are merely conventions. Then the spectrum of like the light cones sort of Hamiltonian, which is, well, basically the chiral part of the Hamiltonian, L0 minus C over 24. It's just, it's pretty trivial. On these states, it's just this expression here, which is one would expect for a free field. And the important point where L here is just the sum of these integers here. And L, I'll refer to L as the level. In what follows, I'll refer to L as, so it's just a simple integer, one would expect from 2D CFT, where L is the level. And the important point is that the number of linear independent states in BPS with fixed L is given by the number of partitions of L. When L is zero, it's just a Fock vacuum. There's just one state. And when L is one, there's two states, A minus one on PS and A minus two on PS, acting on PS. So there's two states and five when L is two and so on. I mentioned there's also a discrete component, and the description of this is more difficult, and I don't want to go into details about how this works, but these are states localized at the tip of the cigar. So the wave functional goes to zero when U is very large. They're localized only at the tip. And the spectrum is still described the same as before, basically, except the difference is that S now takes some sort of discrete set of pure imaginary values. And it turns out that if S is in the set of admissible values, it's always differed to P plus one half I by some I times some integer. IS is always for some certain choice of sign plus minus. You notice that I have P here, not P bar. And that's the reason, because P plus P bar is an integer. So I could put P bar here and maybe this will just change the definition of A. And then the discrete set takes this form where these are no longer Fock spaces. These are certain, they're called, degenerate representations of the algebra of extended conformal symmetry. They come from discrete series representations of SL2R/U1, maybe, and that's more familiar to people with this sort of language. And the only difficulty is the correct form of the set sigma. And in fact, it was Dijkov and Linda found this set sigma of admissible values of pure imaginary S was actually incorrect. And only in the later works, 10 years later, it was revised and corrected by Hanani, Pesestrus, and Rubert Shamiris later. So the dimensions of level subspaces are not no longer part to L. These are not just Fock spaces. It's a more complicated structure. And the character is given by this complicated, more complicated formula. So in computing the partition function, it contains two contributions. So there's a contribution when you take the trace of the discrete component and a contribution to the trace of the continuous component. And the contribution of from the discrete component is simple. It's just this product of characters. And the only difficulty is finding the correct form of the set sigma. And I mentioned just previously that it's a difficult problem. One can't use just a free field analysis, for instance, as I did for the continuous components. And it was only found, as I mentioned, 10 years later from the original works of Dijkov and Linda. But once this is found, there's no issues in computing this partition function. However, recall that the continuous component, there's a direct integral over S. And so when you compute the partition function, there's an integral over DS, and the integration measure, one has to account for the fact that it could be non-trivial. There could be some non-trivial function rho that depends on the quantum numbers S, P, and P bar, and also depends on the level of the state. It might not be the same. In the tower, it might not be the same as for the conformal primary as for the descendants, which are labeled by L and O bar. In principle, it's a non-trivial function. And also it depends, it's divergent. It has a divergence, log of one over epsilon, and it depends on the regularization of the target manifold, on the particular regularization. So it's not a feature of the conformal field theory, but it depends on other input. So it's not as simple calculating this part. Now, what Maldus and Agurison do in their paper is essentially they make the assumption, which is, what some people might consider is a rather strong assumption, that the density of states is just proportional to the number of states in the level of the, so at level LL bar, it's proportional to this number of states in that module. And then this fixes this up to an overall scalar factor. Moreover, they, based on the analysis of their partition function, they give an explicit form for the scalar factor, that it's just this constant is non-universal divided by epsilon and up to these gamma functions. That's interpreted as the sum of this part, if you recall, is the sum of two scattering phases, one at the tip and one at the side. Then plugging this expression into the contribution, this rho of S can be factored out of the sum. It also depends on P and B bar, by the way, but it can be factored out of the sum. then this sum over L over bar can be explicitly taken to give you these dedicated interfunctions, and this is just this part here. And one gets just the integral over rho infinity, just this one, the scalar factor rho versus Q with a sum over these quantum numbers, P and P bar depend on these quantum numbers. One gets this rather much more simplified expression for Z quants if one makes this assumption. And that's pretty much what they propose in their 2000 paper. However, this is a rather strong assumption, and one might think of making a consistency check. So one might think, so is this formula that they obtained by computing the path integral, does it really equal to Z disk plus this extra part, which used the very strong assumption that rho of S is just density of states proportional to the number of states, is basically determined by the density of states of the conformal primaries. And it's a very, it's a rather strong assumption. And also let me just check that if this works out, it's rather non-trivial, because here you have one representation. It's a rather non-trivial complex analytic statement in complex analysis, because the right-hand side is given in this way, and the left-hand side is some integral. It's divergent, so one has to take the divergent part from here and here and match the divergences up to some non-universal constants. It's a rather complicated analytic computation in principle, but at least it should be possible to denumerate. Because we were mainly focused on the spin chain, we wanted to make sure that the results of the Sanogi and Son were correct, we just numerically computed this. And we found actually that it doesn't work. It doesn't pass this test. Their proposal, their assumption that they made was probably a bit too strong in their computation. And at this point, I'd just like to, for completeness, I'd like to present the formula for the density of states of the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model. And it's given by this formula with this divergent part that is proportional part L bar, because it's just a partition function, basically a cylinder. But it has this non-trivial function here. And it contains this first part, which is these product of gamma functions, which is the same as that comes from the assumption that Mollis and Oberyson did. But there's also a part that doesn't depend, that depends on the descent of the state, on where the state sits in the conformal tower. So for L is equal to zero, this product here is empty and it disappears. And so the Mollis and Oberyson proposal is correct for the primary states. But when L gets bigger, you end up having these non-trivial rational functions of P and S. It's not the same. It's different. And these exponents here are all integers. They're all positive integers. And this function DAL, I can't write a closed expression, but I can give you the generating function of this DAL. So it's defined by expanding, by as the coefficient of the series expansion. And you might notice that the series expansion is basically the same. It's almost identical to the character of the discrete series representations of the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model up to some stupid factor Q to the power of S squared over up to the energy base, roughly speaking, up to the Q to the power of the conformal dimension of the primary state. So this way we've I should say that we numerically checked this, of course. otherwise, of course, one can put forward as many conjectures as one likes, but yeah, it's good to numerically check. So one just takes the partition function and subtracts the singular part, both from the left-hand side and the right-hand side. And we take the singular part in this way, just as the regularis part is modulo invariant. So strictly speaking, if one didn't include this log of im of tau term, this Z reg will not be modulo invariant. And this modulo invariant serves as a check of the accuracy of our numerical computations. And you can see that they basically coincide. Here, they don't coincide as well on the one hand, but on the other hand, you see that the modulo invariants this number should be equal to this number by modulo invariants, but actually they're not equal very much. And this just reflects the fact that when tau is small, the series doesn't converge as fast and one has to take more and more terms in the sum. And we wanted, when we did this computation, we wanted there to be sort of a reasonable computer time. We didn't want to wait days. We wanted to calculate in a few minutes. So that's why the accuracy here is 673 and this 975. It's a bit three decimal places. It's 10 to the negative 6. But we suspect that's because if we use more computer time, we could probably make these numbers a little bit better. So this way, we've resolved the first issue. The second issue in this Euclid Jacobs and Salyer proposal. And in fact, we made a very detailed study of the spin chain, which is very technical, and I'm not going to present anything about it just because it's too technical and uses integrability methods. I just want to talk about the results. So the spin chain possesses sort of global C conjugation symmetry, which acts on the locus spins in this way. And as a result, the Hilbert space of the spin chain can be, it's pseudo-Hilbert space because it's not positive definite. It can be decomposed into two spaces. One is the C squared is equal to one. So C has eigenvalues plus minus one, and one can decompose into the eigenvalues of this C conjugation. And then in the scaling limit, the space of low energy states becomes some sort of space that occurs in the scaling limit. And it also admits this conjugation where C acting on these H plus minus, these are just eigenspaces of C. This C is the operator in the scaling limit. So it's not actually, there's some abusive notation here. This C is defined at the lattice. This one is in the scaling limit. So a bit of abusive notation. And I apologize for this. And then we check that H plus as a linear space coincides with the space of states of the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model. And in particular, it also contains decomposition, H-cont and H-disc. We'll check this numerically for, we did some pretty good checks. And you can look at the original paper, I guess, if you're more interested. And H-plus-cont, it possesses a continuous spectrum of scaling dimensions. And its density coincides with the density of states that we proposed before. And that's actually how we obtained this formula. We didn't do it by analyzing the Euclidean black hole. We did it through the analysis spin chain. And H-disc is... conformal dimension of discrete, and it's isomorphic. Well, as a linear space, it's isomorphic to H-disc. This is a new result, which is rather technical, new result, and that's supported by many numerical computations. And therefore, the conjecture made by Euclid, Jacobs, and Salyer holds in a weak form in the fact that one half of the partition function of the spin chain, the scalar limit, because we're considering only one of these eigenspaces, is equal to Z, the partition function of the Euclidean black hole. However, we still have this issue one, where the nonlinear sigma model is a unitary CFT, while the spin chain Hamiltonian is not Hermitian. And in principle, resolved. So studying the energy spectrum is not enough, which was done before us. This can be resolved by studying sort of the Hermitian structures in H plus minus, which are induced in the scaling limit of the spin chain. So on the spin chain, one considers some pseudo Sesky linear forms, Sesky linear forms which are not positive definite, such that the Hamiltonian is a Hermitian operator, and see what happens at the scaling limit. And we found, for instance, that the algebra of extended conformal symmetry underlying the critical behavior is a certain W algebra with the central charge C being smaller than 2, whereas you recall that for the Euclidean black hole, it has to be greater than 2. Then the positive definite inner product induced, Sesky linear, the inner product, I don't want to call it inner product because inner product might assume positive definiteness, but the Sesky linear form makes the Hamiltonian H adjoint on the lattice it induces a certain inner product in the theory that in the scaling limits, which turns out to be non-positive definite. And as such, these Hilbert spaces are actually pseudo-Hilbert spaces. You have negative norm states, for example. Also, the inner products, they're different for H plus and H, for the discrete component and the continuous component. For the discrete component, they're different. The inner products turn out to be different. They're both compatible with this W infinity algebra, but the W infinity algebra possesses two different inner products compatible with the algebra, the W infinity algebra, and they turn out to be different. And as a result, although for the lattice, yes, for the regularized theory, they both exist. We suggest that in the scalar limit, they can't be considered as they can't be both interpreted as normalizable states within a single conformal field theory, just because they're grouped with different inner products. And finally, we support, this is of course all a proposal because we can't do any calculations on the side of the Lorentzian black hole nonlinear signal model, but we suggest that the space that we would equip with the non pseudo Hilbert space, it contains null vectors with respect to the algebra of conformal symmetry. And just using the standard approach, quotienting by the null vectors, we identified, we propose that this Hilbert space is a pseudo Hilbert space of the Lorentzian black hole nonlinear signal model. And the way one should approach this conjecture is that the Lorentzian black hole signal model is not defined, strictly speaking, because the path integral is not very well defined. And we're sort of assigning a meaning to the Lorentzian black hole nonlinear signal model by saying that it's the theory underlying the scaling limit of a certain sector of the space of states of a particular spin chain. So listen. Okay, and finally, yes, I'm out of time. I started 3 minutes late, and it's now 53 past, at least according to my watch. So let me just finish with a summary and an outlook. So the subject is very confusing. So I thought I'd just talk about what's right and what's wrong in the literature because it's a bit confusing. But the Euclid-Jackson-Salyer conjecture is correct in the weak form that the partition function of the spin chain and that the Euclidean black hole linear signal model coincide. This formula for the density of states contained in this, it has an incorrect assumption, so it's incorrect. The scaling limit of the spin chain governed by the Euclidean is governed by the 2D Euclidean black hole, the strong version of the Euclid-Jackson-Salyer conjecture we rejected because of this issue with non-unitarity. And as I mentioned before, from the spin chain, we propose that, say, the pseudo-Hilbert space that we define as the scaling limit of the space of states in the spin chain, and we define it exactly in terms of representations of the general representations of the double infinity algebra. It coincides with the Hilbert space of the Lorentzian black hole, and we propose an explicit formula for rho that just comes from the spin chain. An exciting future direction, which might be very far away, would be to assign a meaning to this path integral, which doesn't make sense, and to see if it works, I guess. Okay, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you for inviting me. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to try to answer them.
Very good, thank you. Let's open for questions. I have a naive one. So you have this periodic spin chain and you have this cigar. So where should I draw the spin chain? Should I imagine it is at the infinity, at the boundary of the cigar? There is some quantum spin chain.
So maybe you're thinking about this from a different perspective, but it's just, for instance, I'm sure you know that the scaling limit of the Ising model, 2D Ising model, is a bunch of free fermions, right? So it's in the sense of analyzing the critical behavior. So n, the number of sides of the spin chain goes to infinity. It's just this, that gained rigor by the work of Wilson, but one can consider critical behavior of a lattice system and make connections to a CFT. Did I answer your question? Is this what you meant?
I'm not sure, but it's probably because I'm not very used to thinking about this cigar. So you matched one quantity on this cigar, right? Which was this density of states. And then you also add in the cigar picture, for example, the scattering state, right? You send a state, you scatter, and it comes back. Yes. Where is this scattering happening? Can I describe this scattering also on the spin chain? Is there something going on there?
So by the scattering, I mean a certain class of classical solutions which are quantized and become primary states of the CFT. I'm sorry. I don't think there's a direct analogy between what happens on the cigar and what happens on the spin chain. One should think of the spin chain as a regularized spin chain regularization of the cigar. And for instance, Pedro, one should, for instance, only the low energy excitations have anything to do with the when I take the scaling limit, I consider only the low energy excitations of the spin chain. So the conformal field theory describes the low energy behavior of the spin chain, and it's I don't think there is any direct interpretation of say a black hole or something like this in the spin chain. It's based on these notions in condensed matter physics that we can use Q of T to describe the scaling limit of a lattice system. Maybe that wasn't very helpful.
No, I'm wondering, for example, in the spin chain, we can do correlation functions. We can integrate out parts of space and compute some entanglement entropy. There are many computations I could do with the spin chain and also with the field theory. So are there many more checks to do? Are there many other computations you could do? Or is this, because what you did looks so hard. I wonder if there's not something simple like some geodesic on the cigar that will match some simple two-point function on the spin chain. I don't know, but maybe it's too nice.
So in principle, one can consider scaling limit of spin operators, right? Of Pauli matrices inserted at different sites of the spin chain. Take n goes to infinity and keeping the distance of the, because when n goes to infinity, strictly speaking, they'll go together. So you keep the distance between them fixed. And one can make connection to a correlator in I'm not sure if it's going to be the Euclidean black hole nonlinear sigma model, but this is still this would be an open problem given the conjecture that we make. And one can make just explicit connections. So say one can calculate this on the spin chain using integrability methods for n goes to infinity, and we'll see that it's asymptotics when you take away all the non-universal stuff, when you throw this away, all the divergences that come from the spin chain, for instance. It should be described by a correlation function involving certain operators. So one can make a connection in this way. And this sort of is done for the XXZ model. These sort of computations are done. And maybe, hopefully, well, it won't be, it'll be similar for this more complicated spin chain.
I see no raised hand, so I will ask one more question. So what do you think we could learn about black holes from this?
Okay, so I guess the way this was framed, this whole talk was framed, was not so much the question about black holes, but the question of nonlinear sigma models on pseudo-Riemannian manifolds, which may have applications to black hole physics. And what I hope one could learn is how to compute this path integral, given the results in the spin chain, it could serve as a guide for computing this path integral. So this path integral is not convergent. One can think of it as you have an absolutely converging series, and then you have a conditionally converging series. So I assume that one can perhaps make sense of this path integral if one defines the space of functions that one integrates over very carefully, and gives meaning to this, not absolutely convergent, like it's like a non-absolutely convergent series, and then perhaps makes, as a check, one has the spin chain computations, which one can explicitly compute or compare to. And in this way, study a nonlinear sigma model on a pseudo-Riemannian manifold. This would be the application, which then may have applications to black hole physics, because analytic continuation in target space these sort of arguments are used. For instance, when people consider thermal ADS free space rather than ADS free space in the ADS CFT correspondence. So it's not direct, but I think this question is might be an interesting one, even to people outside of integrability.
Very good. Any other question? If there are no more questions, let's thank once again Vlad for a very pedagogical talk. And thank you very much. And